Then they went to work worse than heathen men or Turks. And they burned down, they plundered the right fairly. And it was a solemn day as ever you did see, when they plundered the bonny house of Ely.
Mrs. Gallagher, where did you learn that beautiful ballad?
I learned that from my mother when I was a child.
Your mother used to sing it to you?
Years ago, and she could sing beautifully.
Could she? Mm-hmm. I'm sure she could.
That was Dr. Helen Creighton speaking with the singer, Mrs. Gallagher, on a recording she made at Shebucto Head 40 years ago. This is Rock Meets Bone. I'm Brian Guns. Dr. Helen Creighton is perhaps best known for her discovery of Farewell to Nova Scotia, which she first heard on a rainy autumn day in 1933. For over 60 years, Dr. Creighton's work as collector of Nova Scotia's old-time songs and stories has been recognized and admired throughout the world. As a member of the first pioneer generation of North American cultural explorers, armed only with disc recorders and a belief in the glory of the oral tradition, Helen Creighton sought out and saved the songs and folklore that form the cultural and spiritual heritage of this province. The songs you will hear in this program come from her collection of original recordings at the Public Archives of Nova Scotia. We've edited some songs to give us more time to listen to Dr. Creighton herself. 1 week before her 90th birthday, she talked with us about her life and folklore. The interviewer is Peter Lieberson, a composer now living in Nova Scotia, whose work has been performed by major orchestras, including the Boston Symphony. This was the last interview that Helen Creighton gave before she died in Dartmouth in 1989.
And I loved the Bonny House of Airlie. And there was a very dramatic occasion, which I tell about the introduction, when the Second World War was just starting. And there was a teacher here from a women's college. Is it Holyoke?
Yes.
And I thought, well, if she's teaching ballads in her classes, how much more they'd mean to her if she heard one sung by one of our people. So I took her down to the lighthouse at Shebucto Head. And it was a very strange day. The fog was thick down low, but the sun was shining and the sky was blue up above. And you could just see the tops of the masts of the ships in the first convoy going off to war. And I asked Mrs. Gallagher if she would sing. We were standing out on the rocks, a very, very steep bluff by the lighthouse. So the song she chose to sing was the Bonny House of Airlie.
Oh.
And Miss, what was her name? She was Scotch, and she was here because she couldn't get a pass to go back to Scotland. And she thought Nova Scotia was the closest place to Scotland. So that was, I said, what a fitting song for her to sing.
Mrs. Gallagher, will you sing the Bonny House of Airlie, please?
Lay ogle thee, look out to all the castle wall. And she sobbed and she sighed right fairly when she saw the great Argyle and all his Highland men come to plunder the Bonny House of Airlie. Come down, Lady Ogilvy, he cried, And I will kiss you right fairly. Or I swear by the breadth of my bonny broadsword, I will not leave a standing stone in Ely. I will not come down to you, great Argyle, neither will I kiss you right fairly. I will not come down, cried Lady Argyle, though you would not leave a standing stone in Ely. Seven sons have I borne, said she, and the youngest has ne'er seen his daddy. But if I had as many, many more, they'd all carry arms for Prince Charlie.
Dr. Roy Mackenzie was my inspiration.
Yes.
He had collected in the north, along the north shore of the province, at River John and Tattlebush. So it was because of him that I knew that there were such things as folk songs. I didn't know what a folk song was. We never sang them in school.
Yes.
We used to sing the Maypole Leaf, our plum deer. I never asked to sing a folk song because that would have been using a phrase they were not familiar with any more than I was when I started. But it's called the old time songs.
Old time songs?
Yes.
I see.
Old time, that's what they called them. I was so lucky, really, because I only had to go 10 miles, and were all the songs that I could take. And I didn't know what was a good song and what wasn't, but yes. I began to get the feeling for them. And another way in which I was so fortunate was that radio had not been discovered then.
Yes.
Because since then, they picked things up very quickly.
Well, I guess there's no reason to speculate, but do you have any feeling why there was so little interest in the beginning in Nova Scotian folk songs and folklore?
Well, they're really, to the singers, they were kind of private matter,
I
think. And you see, they led quiet lives, and they only sang to their own families and friends.
Yes.
As for getting up on a platform and singing, that wasn't their way of life. And of course, some of the early singers were illiterate.
Yes.
I think that's one thing that appealed to me in the work. I had so much variety. Because one day I'd be in a very humble home, and the next day I'd be at a university, and a lot of things in between.
Yes.
Here is Enos Hartland of Southeast Passage singing The Derby Ram for Dr. Creighton in 1943. Some words may be difficult to understand, but there is a surprise at the end.
All right. As I was going to Derby along the market day, I spied a fire ram so that it was fed upon hay. A ran ten fellin and he ran the fine hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was fed upon hay. He had 4 feet, sir, and on his feet he stood. And every step he gave, sir, he kept it a liquor land. A ran ten fellin and he ran the fine hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was fed upon hay. The wool grew out of his back that reached it to the sky. The eagles build a nest, for I hear the young ones cry. A rant and fillin and he ramped the fine hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was set upon hay.
I'm
the horns go out of his head, that reached it to the moon. A man was up from February, he never come down to June. He ran to find hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was fed upon hay. The branches grow out of his horns as high as a man could reach. The pulpit's all around, for the devil himself could preach. A rant and fern and he rant the fine hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was fed upon hay. The man that owned the ram, as he was very rich. But the man that made the song, he was a lion son of a bitch. A rant and fern and he rant the fine hay. It was the finest ram, sir, that ever was fed upon hay. Did you ever hear that one? Did you ever hear me sing that one anymore? That one, just, did you ever hear that one before? It just come in my mind and say, when you were singing that song, it just come in my mind. I can't sing anymore.
When they realized that their songs were of interest, not only to themselves, they were so cooperative. So they're really a giving people, very fine people. Old Mr. Henneberry on Devil's Island was the man who knew the most songs, and nearly everybody on the island had learned them from him. They had great, he was in his own community, he was very highly respected, partly for the fact of his great memory. One song is 78 verses.
Oh, my goodness.
My right arm got so tired, I had to try writing with my left. For Mr. Henneberry, he used to go out in his boat alone fishing, and these were his companions.
Yes, I see.
And Nathan Hatt, he would say, after singing The Dreadful Ghost, he would say, "He was a fine young man, and she was a nice girl. She didn't go out on the streets on Saturday night, but she stayed home with her father and mother." And he was serious about it.
Yes. He knew all these people. They were his companions.
They were his companions.
Yes. Yes.
And the first time I went to see Mrs. Gallagher, who was my best female singer, she had to scrub the floor because it was Saturday and she might have guests on Sunday. So what did she do? She sang while she scrubbed. And they were her companions in her work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yes, I don't go in for favorites very much.
Mm-hmm.
I like variety. I still, when I can't sleep, I sometimes go to Peggy Gordon.
Why is it special to you?
I don't know. I like the tune, I think.
You like the tune?
Yes. Yeah.
Do you want to sing it now?
No, I can't sing. Sorry. Of course, I can't think of a song without thinking of the singer.
The singer who sang it for you originally.
Yes.
I see. Yes.
Old Dennis Smith. He was a dear old soul.
Did he sing this particular song, Peggy Gordon?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
A few others sang it, but I think he had the best singing of it.
All right. Will I sing the same one?
Yes.
No, Peggy Gordon, you are my darling. Come set you down all on my knee. Come tell to me the very reason that I am slighted so by thee. I'm deep in love and I dare not show it. My heart I smothered all in my breast. It not for you to let the whole world know it. A troubled mind, no, it has no rest. I lean my head on a cask of brandy, which was my fancy, I do declare. For while I'm drinking, I'm always thinking how I'm to gain that lady fair. I wish my love was one red rosy, planted down on yonder wall, and I myself could be a dewdrop that in her bosom I might fall. I wished I was in Cobus Castle, and my true love was along with me. Oh, Peggy Gordon, you are my darling. Oh, Peggy Gordon, I die for thee. The sea is deep and I cannot wade it, neither have I got wings to fly. I wish I had some jolly boatsman to ferry over my love and I will go down to some lonesome valley where no womankind was ever to be found, where the pretty little birds, they change their voices, and every moment a different sound. I wished I was in Pennsylvania, where the marble stone are black as ink, where the pretty little girls, they do adore me. I'll sing no more till I get a drink.
I was giving a talk to the Canadian authors at the convention here, so I thought that they would be interested in the source of the songs. And I had Edmund Henry, Son of Old Men, and Mrs. Gallagher, you could also depend on, and Walter Roast, whose life has changed. And Edmund was a very shy man, and it was a wonder that he agreed to sing at all. So he was so shy that his friends all tried to help him along, and by the time, for him to up on the stage, he'd had too many drinks altogether. And when Mrs. Gallagher was singing, he would sing along with her, and I had to go down and pat him on the shoulder. Edmund, this is Mrs. Gallagher's song, just let her sing it. But he came out with the final verse, so women, they are so much worse than men. You've sent them to hell, they get sent back again.
This is the last half of a 1948 recording of Gay Spanish Maid. Edmund Henneberry's daughter, Sadie, joins her father after two verses.
Her hand soft and white, she pressed to her heart. When he told her how long he would stay, God bless you, my dear, and your parents at home, when from you I am far, far away. Her hand soft and white, she pressed to her heart, and her sorrow no mortal can tell. He kissed her again as he stood on the beach, and bade her a loving farewell. That night near the rose in a terrible storm, and a good ship went down in the storm. I swam to a plank that escaped from the wreck, while the rest met a watery grave. He returned to his love that he left on the shore. How she thought of her boy in the storm. She died like a rose that is called by the frost. And she left me in sorrow to
at critical points, you've received some kind of guidance or message. We call it supernatural, but...
I think I've had guidance all my life.
Yes.
I'm sure I've been protected. The most beautiful was when my sister died, and she had had an accident when she was about 10, and her mind didn't develop much after that. So she... very sad having anything like that in your family. And I sort of inherited her and did the best I could, which wasn't always as much as it should be. She always feel that way. But she lived to be, I think, just 2 days before her 80th birthday. And she was in a nursing home. I had to find places for her to stay, otherwise I couldn't work. And if I couldn't work, well, how could we live? So, anyway, I had been told that she was in the hospital and that the end would be quite near. As I got towards the end, and I realized that I hadn't asked for a clergyman to go to her in her dying moments. Although I had come all the way home from Tattabagoosh to attend a service in my own church, so I could pray for her. But in these last moments, well, the nurse, one nurse on one side of the bed and another nurse on the other side, and suddenly I went rushing down to the desk and asked the nurse on duty to please get me somebody. And so she got a United Church minister. And he was very nice and he came, and then things were reversed. We stood. We were the ones who stood beside her. And he gave a prayer. I think it was a general prayer. And then a prayer for me, and then I think it was a prayer for her. But that time I realized that the shoulder, which had been heaving, was no longer moving, and that she had gone. And a feeling came over me, which was really ecstasy. And it just filled me. It was indescribable. It was so lovely. And I thought, well, when the doctor comes and see me looking so uplifted, he's going to think I'm a funny sort of sister. But you know, that stayed with me for a whole year. I was just, as I say, uplifted. As though perhaps any love that she might have had for me just flowed. Something came from her to me, certainly. And it's called, I'm told it's called, the gift of grace.
Yes.
The trees are growing high and the leaves are growing green, and many happy days that I have seen. It's lying alone of a cold winter's night. He's young, but he's daily are growing. Now, Father, dear Father, you have done me a wrong. You have married me to a boy that's too young, for I am twice 12 and he is scarce 13. He's young, but he's daily a-growing. Now, Father, dear Father, oh, what shall we do? We'll send him to school for a year or two. Whilst the tears came a-trinkling all around about her cheeks, he's young, but he's daily a-growing. I will make him a shirt of the cambric so white, and I'll make it with my own hands, and I'll bow it with ribbons all around about his neck, that the girls may all know that he's married. One day as she sat in her father's long hall, she spied all the schoolboys a-playing at a ball. And amongst them all she spied her own true love, the fairest of them all. At the age of 13 he was a married man. At the age of 14 his eldest son was born. At the age of 15 his grave was growing green, and that put an end to his growing.
That was Mrs. R.W. Duncan of Dartmouth in 1944.
Yeah, well, this is something that I could never understand. There's one woman who was illiterate completely, and yet she sang the ballad of Lord Johnny Scott, which she had to learn a line at a time from her uncle. And why would she be so interested in a man in far-off Scotland in a different era? That's what used to interest me.
And Did you find out why?
I decided that they must be very nice people if through song they could care so much about these young people and the people they sang about. And I think that was quite true.
Yes.
They were nice people.
With Helen Creighton's 1949 recording of Edward Gallagher's harmonica in the background, we'd like to thank Margaret McBride of the Public Archives of Nova Scotia for her cheerful assistance, and composer Peter Lieberson for his research and interview. Rock Meets Bone is produced with the assistance of the Naropa Institute of Canada. Thanks for listening.